This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From Trackhub Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. Great to have you with us. I know we were supposed to do a preview for IndyCar last week. I'm sure the other 500 podcasts did them. We had a little bit of scheduling conflicts here. But nonetheless, we have a wrap-up for you nonetheless. We'll start things off with Jovincent Murthy. He is the third full-time season with the USNF 2000, and he won his first race in the first race of the season at Barber Motorsports Park. Also, I think, Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't I say last year, near the middle of the season, if you put Alex Palou in a good seat next this season, he's going to win a race?
You say lots of things, so yeah, you might have said that too.
Well, he did win a race. He won the Honda Grand Prix of Alabama. We talk with him on that. Also, Tanner Watkins stops by. He is the most recent winner in the Coca-Cola of Kokomo Indy Elite Series. Oh, by the way, that was the 6th annual Indy 500 presented by Canlis 317. So we'll talk about his win and what he does inside of racing. Other than that, Charlie and I also break down the race at Barber. As always, you can call us on our Google voicemail, 815-714-9260. Email us, insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Also, you can tweet us or find us on Facebook. So, Barber, that was something. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on. A couple of things that have passed through our radar. We'll talk about the 600-pound gorilla in the room in a little bit. I want to touch on something that just fell into my lap just before recording. RobinMillerRacer.com reports, wrote an article saying, Jimmy's not the one in the need of a reality check. And this goes out to all the fans who said, Jimmy Johnson's just here for publicity. It's like Danica over again. Yeah, I don't understand it. Guess what? I like this. I like this more than Danica because we have a driver that has a caliber. He's a 7-time cup champion, okay? He's raced off-road. He's raced circle track. He can do whatever he wants at this point. And I'm excited to have somebody like Jimmy Johnson in this series. This is the shot in the arm IndyCar needs right now. And for the same people who are saying that we need IndyCar to grow, we need IndyCar to do this in one breath, and then another breath they come in and say, I understand why we have Jimmy Johnson toiling around 2 laps in the back. He's going to learn. He's a rookie, okay?
You know, I think you should do an entire episode in that voice.
I don't know if I should, because it kind of distracts from the way, you know, the show is. But yeah, it would distract from... I couldn't do the whole show in that voice. You know that.
Well, you know, great things come from hard work. You know, if you just look at the results and ignore the context, then Jimmy Johnson's performance, I hate to say this, but his performance at Barber mirrors very closely the performance of Formula One rookie Nikita Mazepin. You know, last place in all session spins in the race.
Yeah, but the difference between Mazepin and Jimmy Johnson is at least Jimmy Johnson made it past turn one in his first race.
That's true. And, you know, I say that with the huge caveat of ignoring all the context. And obviously, Jimmy Johnson is a 7-time NASCAR champion. He's obviously established himself as a competent race car driver. And this is like a completely new thing. You know, I tell people that are new to racing or don't know much about it, when I tell them I'm, you know, involved in racing, they say, oh, you must be a big NASCAR fan. And I, of course, go, no. I mean, it's okay, but what I do is very different. And they're like, oh, and so basically it's like football and soccer. Like if you strip it down to the bare essentials, like basically both sports, you have a ball, there's 11 players on each side and you're trying to get the ball to the other end of the field. And it's on a grass field, a grass rectangular field. And that's pretty much the end of the similarities with racing or with NASCAR and IndyCar. You've got a 4-wheeled vehicle powered by an internal combustion engine that's driving around on rubber tires on an asphalt or concrete circuit. But beyond that, it's completely different.
Yeah, I mean, even Jimmy Johnson said he's still having a problem handling it. And remember, he ran Hunter Yaney's FR America's car that Hunter's running right now in FRA. And think of what would happen if he didn't spend all that time with VRD in the seat. You know, he's trying to learn as much as he can, and we know how strict the testing rules are for IndyCar, so he's going to be slow for the first couple of races. When we get to Road America, I wouldn't be surprised if he's middle of the pack. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, I think the big story going into this season, obviously, aside from the fact that he's here at all, isn't so much his performance at the first race, but how he's going to improve over the season. If he's still like this in June, then I would start to be really concerned. But, you know, first race is going to be tough no matter what.
Well, and you know, it also helps that he has, you know, look at his teammates, and he has one hell of a driver coach in, almost said Tony Kanaan. Tony's over in Brazil this week. We're running stock cars in Dario Franchitti.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. I mean, you know, he's Dario Franchitti to lean on. There are pictures of him talking to his hero, Rick Mears, during practice. The guy's going to have so much help. You know, his teammates, Scott frickin' Dixon, six-time IndyCar champion. I mean, he's got all the resources he needs in that paddock.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get better. And it's just, you know, something to keep an eye out for as the season progresses.
We'll talk more about that here in just a little bit on the race. One thing that really kind of touched on this in the final line in Rob Miller's article said this, but let's sign off with some common sense by Todd Brayton, the younger brother of Scott, who made this Facebook post. JJ is trying something new and it takes big balls to do what he's attempting. Let's respect that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I mean, I think it's great that he's here.
Oh yeah.
It's good for the series. It's fun to watch. It gives the haters something to complain about. So it's a win-win situation all around. Everybody's happy.
Speaking of happy, I'm happy that we're going to see fans back at the Hallow Grounds for the Indianapolis 500 this year. It was announced that 40% capacity will be had. It's about 125,000 fans. Regardless, that means that it'll be the highest attended sports event since the shutdown. That is huge, and you got to give props to Doug Bowles, Roger Penske, IU Health, Marion County, you know, Health Department, State of Indiana, for all working together to get that number.
Yeah, I mean, I got to admit, I'm a little bit surprised that it's under 50%. I did think it would be a little bit more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like you said, I didn't realize it's going to be the biggest crowd since the pandemic started. So that's good.
Now, the one thing is that there will be no fans in the infield. So if you have infield tickets already, you know, like general admission, you will have you'll have a refund in your account. All concerts are canceled. No infield access during practice days, I believe it is too, but there's going to be fans in the stands at Indy. Holy cow.
That's great.
Yeah, that's huge. So, to the naysayers that were saying because no fans were there for testing, oh, that sucks. I'm so sorry that you're wrong. But no, in all seriousness, too, I was going to make a poll. Oh, someone on Twitter said that, and I like this idea, that because Takuma Sato did not took his victory lap with no fans in the stands, that sometime during race day, whether it's, you know, before the cars go to grid or whatnot, that he should be allowed to take a lap with fans saluting him for winning the race last year. And I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, I'd be, ladies and gentlemen, start your engines. Okay, Takuma, you go to the front, or, you know, pull forward if you're in the front row. Go ahead of the pace car and take your ceremonial lap. Done.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You know, I mean, here's the thing. You and I have talked about this and how good he is there at Indy. So, I mean, why not? He is now a legend of Indy.
Yeah, two-time winner.
Yeah, two-time winner. Two different teams. Almost won it in 2012. So, Oh, by the way, the Miami Grand Prix also has been announced for this year. I want to get your thoughts on that real quick. Did you get a chance to take a look at the track layout?
Yes. I saw a video of it, of like somebody driving on a simulator, but those kind of videos, like you're watching a video like that, you don't really get a good sense of it. But it's basically going to be like a stadium parking lot circuit, it looks like. Which is always, there's some that are pretty good. For some reason, I don't know why, but I was a huge fan of the Denver circuit.
Denver was a good circuit, though, because it wasn't just a parking lot circuit. It was half parking lot, half cars, but the parking lot circuit was wide enough to where you could actually have some real racing, and that penultimate turn, too, was like, what, 100, 150 feet wide?
So, yeah. Idealistically, I prefer that a street circuit is made out of like the organically laid down streets rather than cutting it through arbitrarily through a parking lot. But, it looks pretty complex. There's a lot of twists and turns, a lot of corners. Not really sure how many passing zones there's going to be, but it's Formula One. I mean, they push a button to, pass anyways.
Well,
so you can't really pass anywhere without DRS.
And here's what I find kind of hilarious. I don't know if you heard this. So, let's see. It's off of turn 5 or 6. There's a Walmart there.
A Walmart?
A Walmart.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm taking a look at a map right now. Actually, it looks like there's one really long straightaway, and there's another one that... has a couple of bends in the front, and then it straightens out. So those are probably going to be two really good passing zones right there. In the IndyCar course in Memphis, there's like a courthouse inside the circuit.
Yep.
or like a juvenile courthouse or something like
that.
Yeah,
I saw that.
That's part of the fun of street circuits is you get interesting combinations like that.
I just can't. Go ahead, sorry.
If anybody's camping out at the track, they won't have far to go to get supplies. Miami.
I just cannot wait for I just can't wait for IndyCar to run there in about 2-3 years, because that's about the average time between when F1 vacates or IndyCar just decides to run there.
Yeah, if you see a flock of vultures circling above the Formula One race, that's just the IndyCar executives.
It's just Roger Penske. Don't worry about it. He's not trying to get back into F1. He's just trying to take over the street course.
And, speaking of stadium circuits, one that I think is interesting, I mentioned this to you before, but I'm not sure if I have on the podcast, but somebody on Reddit posted a fantasy track of an updated Meadowlands outside of New York City.
I remember that, yeah.
And yeah, it looks like a pretty decent circuit.
Yeah.
If Roger, wants to get into this market, have him send me a message and I'll send him that map.
Well, I'm sure we have somebody who's helping Roger out that listens to this show. I've got to say, though, with stadium circuits, you raced in one in then Star Mazda over at Houston. So you have experience with that.
Yeah. That was actually my very first street circuit. And my first practice session, I spun and hit the wall backwards at like 80 miles an hour.
Oops.
But it was all uphill from there.
Yeah.
Would you say it was all uphill or all downhill?
I would say all uphill, because if you say all downhill, that's when all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, but if you're going, everything's uphill, it means, like, you're constantly struggling. But also downhill is, like, down, you're going down, that's not good.
Yeah.
But it's easier, because, like, the snowball rolls downhill and picks up momentum.
Well, it's just, started at the bottom, now we're here,
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. We've gone off on a tangent now.
Yep. All right, Charlie, I'll have you sit back for just a little bit, because coming up next, Yuvin Sundramoorthy joins us on Inside Open. We'll talk about his first win in his third year as a USF 2000 driver.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
It was a weekend of first-time winners in the NTT IndyCar Series with Alex Palou. We'll have him on here in just a little bit. Had a pair of first-time winners in Indy Lights with Linus Lundquist and David Malukas. And a first-time winner in USF 2000 as well. Even Cinder Morthy joins us here on Inside Open Wheel, and you're not at the track right now, which a lot of your competitors are. You're actually back home in Wisconsin, where if I saw anything how it was yesterday out here at the Trackout Multimedia Studios, I heard there's a little snowflakes up there.
Yeah, I'm in my dorm room right now in University of Wisconsin-Madison, and it's pretty cold out here. We had some snow back in my house about an hour west or hour east of here. So it's interesting. It doesn't feel like April.
No, it doesn't. Well, it's just that fake winter we have here in the Midwest. So we'll talk more about being at University of Wisconsin-Madison here in just a little bit. But I've got to say, you know, I've watched you through the USF 2000 championship the past 3 years, and I knew you were knocking at that first win. What's it like finally taking that first race of the year and just getting that first win monkey off your back?
You know, it feels really great. I mean, everyone's been telling me it's all about the confidence, getting the confidence, and really obviously getting that first win really boosts the confidence. And it all came down to the qualifying, you know, like especially at a track like Barber. If you don't qualify well, you're not going to finish well, obviously, which I found out in race two. But it just qualified well, didn't put a foot wrong. I think all of my laps were within like 2/10 of each other. So and it just felt really good in the end.
And yeah, especially Barber, because that track, you know, yeah, it's a great open wheel track, but it was built for motorcycles. So you only have a handful of passing opportunities, whereas now we're going to St. Petersburg this weekend and you have a couple of more.
Yeah, especially watching some onboard from Rinus VK in 2017. I think he went from 15th place to third. So a very different racing possibility there in that track. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, of course, you're also very familiar with the Pabst Racing team. You've been with Pabst for a couple of years now. Talk about the atmosphere within that paddock.
You know, the whole Pabst team is a family. That's what we like to call it. It's everyone is super friendly with each other. Everyone just talking to each other every time, having conversations. We know when to be serious, but we also know when to kind of relax, chill out, get some dinner. And it really helps to create a nice atmosphere in the team.
And that has to help too, because it's a family run team. You know, it's a team that you're very familiar with being from Wisconsin. The Pabst name, obviously huge in Wisconsin racing. So it's also no brainer that you're going to end up over there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, originally the reason that we went with Pabst is because I ran a Formula 1600 with Cahill, which is the sister team of Pabst Racing. But we ended up coming here, and it was really funny when we found out that they're based in Oconomowoc, which is the exact same city I was born in. So it felt like it was meant to be.
Even Cinder Morthy joins us on Inside Open Wheel, talking about his first win at Barber Motorsports Park. Well, and now you go on to, you know, you go on to St. Petersburg, and you were talking about how Rinus VK moved up so quickly after having a bad start last time he was there with Pabst. Talk about what your thoughts are on street courses, because obviously, you know, in 1600s, you don't run street courses, 2000s, every once in a while. So you're basically running two out of the last three races at the same street course.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't really race there last year, given what happened, but it's definitely going to be a good way to bounce back. I mean, my first race after that crash was a win. So, so far everything's going in the right direction. Just got to make it through turn one, qualify a little bit better, and we should have a good race there. I really love that track. It's really fun. I wish we went to Long Beach, because just on the sim, that's a really fun street course, but St. Pete's really, really fun too.
I was going to say, you're third in points already. You're still with, you know, it's too early to talk about championship, but it's a tight battle already between, you know, Josh Pearson, yourself, Nolan Siegel. So you're in a good spot with that first win, and rest of the season, what are your main thoughts on that? Obviously you like St. Petersburg. You've got Indy after that, both the road course and the oval at Lucas Oil Raceway. And then you go to your home course at Road America.
Yeah, and I think it's a really, really fun stretch to come up. All tracks that you can pass at, minus Lucas Oil, obviously. But I love the Oval, as I've said every year. And Indy's by far one of the best tracks to race at, just purely from a racing aspect, given how big the draft is there. And the wash isn't really that bad because we don't have many long duration high speed corners. So that it's going to be a really fun stretch that I'm really looking forward to until we go to Toronto, depending on if that event happens.
I was going to say, yeah, because signs are pointing to where it's not going to happen. It all depends on what this, you know, city of Toronto, the country, Canada does. But how do you prepare for something like that, knowing, I mean, last year I know a lot of the schedule was up in the air, so how do you prepare for a track that you may or may not be going to this year?
Obviously, you got to prepare for everything, you know, prepare for going to another street course like that. But I also want to take it step by step, not look too far forward. I mean, next race is St. Pete, so there's some street court preparation, but we don't want to, or I don't want to look too far and overthink it, you know, like got to go step by step, look one step into the future, get a couple wins at St. Pete, then move on to Indy.
All right, you're one of the few drivers that I've talked to so far that are kind of still balancing coursework and racing, but you're at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, as you said, so you're going back and forth from the racetrack to college each race. How tough is that balancing the two together?
Yeah, so this year it's a bit interesting, obviously, with all the online school. I really only have two in-person classes that are on Wednesday and Thursday, so they're pretty much out of the way of the events, and then I just take my Zoom classes at the track. Next year is going to be a little interesting. I just set my schedule, and I have 5 days of the week classes throughout the whole day, so it's going to be interesting to figure out. I'm going to have to talk with my professors and get all my work in advance, but I mean, I've been doing it since high school, so it's definitely doable.
Now, what's your major that you're studying over at UW?
I'm a computer science major.
Okay, so perfect. It lines up exactly with what you're doing, you know, in racing. You know, sets you up if, you know, you can't drive. Okay, do computer, you know, you can be a engineer of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. And there's even, some people may not realize it, but there's a lot of computer science involved in racing with onboard telemetry, data, different things like that. So I'm really interested in looking into that stuff too, because I mean, it connects both to my passion.
Well, and not to mention too, you take a look at the driver, the steering wheels these days, and they look more and more, as you know, someone who grew up with Game Boy, they look more and more like a Game Boy than they do actual telemetry.
Yeah, exactly. Ours aren't too complicated yet, but even Indy Lights has a couple of gimmicks and doohickeys on the wheel. So it's definitely becoming more and more advanced software-wise.
Doohickeys.
As the years progress.
Doohickeys. I love that term. It's always great to hear somebody use that term. All right. So outside of the racetrack, outside of studying, what are some of the things that you like to do when frozen tundra doesn't hit Wisconsin?
So I am a snowboarding instructor at Devil's Head Resort in Baraboo, Wisconsin. So anytime I'm in the winter when I'm not racing, I'm usually on the mountain snowboarding. So I really love doing it. I really love teaching it. I wish we had more snow. My friends who go to CU Boulder were all like, oh, we're going to the mountain today. There's like 72 inches of base, and I'm here with, there's nothing here besides a couple snowflakes we're getting.
Couple of snowflakes, maybe if you're lucky they'll bring out the snow machine to, you know, Rib Mountain or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's the season ends much earlier than I would like here, but it is what it is.
Now you're in your third year of USF 2000 championship racing. You've won your first race. Obviously logic would say that you're ready to move up to Indy Pro 2000. Have you had those discussions with other teams, you know, maybe with Augie Pabst, whether or not you're ready to start testing for Indy Pro car for next year?
You know, I really haven't looked into it yet. It's still fairly early. And obviously testing a faster car always helps with the slower car too. But it's always better to kind of keep on track, at least for this first half of the year, until we get fully into the swing of it. I'd say that's more of a summer break kind of a thing, especially once college finals and everything are done.
Yeah, I could imagine, especially since you're going to have college finals right around the time you get ready to go to Indy. So you can have a nice little break between St. Pete and, you know, the Indy GP just to get through finals. So that's got to help at least a little bit.
Yeah, I'm glad they it lines up in the gap pretty perfectly, so I'm happy about that.
I gotta say, congratulations, a well-deserved first win in the road to Indy, and gonna be exciting to see what happens with you this year. How can fans follow you throughout the year?
Thank you so much. And you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Yuven Racing, Yuven Racing, and then on Facebook at Yuven S Racing.
Yuven Sundramoorthy, thanks for joining us on Inside Open Wheel.
Thank you so much for having me.
We have another first-time winner coming up next. It's the winner of the IndyCar race. It's Alex Palou. Next.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, don't tell me what to do.
Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, the second-year driver decided to make a good move here in the early part of the weekend, and, well, he won his first race in the NTT IndyCar Series, and I've got to say, moving from Dale Coyne Racing to Chip Ganassi seemed to have paid off. Alex Palou joins us on Inside Open Wheel. First of all, congratulations. That was, from what I saw last year, it was no surprise that you were going to win a race this season with Chip Ganassi, but to have it come this soon, that's got to be a great relief off your back.
Hey, man, thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, it's been an amazing last few months since we signed and joined Chip Ganassi Racing, and it's been amazing so far. Just started the season, we started strong, got my first win in IndyCar, and I couldn't be happier at the moment.
And this is where you wanted to be all along. You've taken, you know, a very international approach to racing. We'll talk more about the last step that you took before the NTT IndyCar Series, but you went to Dale Coyne, you did well your first, you know, weekend, you had the usual rookie mishaps, but did you imagine that your first win would have come this soon in IndyCar?
I mean, you never think that it's going to come so soon. I mean, I knew I had so many options this year, being part of Chip Ganassi, because you know, you have all the tools to be able to win, but it's just the first race of the season. We just got started. I never raced before a barber. I had tested before twice there, but I have never raced there. So it was a difficult race also with yellows, fuel saving, which I'm not really good at fuel saving, but I was able to win some of the big guys playing their game. So it was just an amazing weekend, and I'm super, super happy to get that done now. Just gives me a lot of confidence to go to St. Pete in the next couple of races and try and do it again.
I was going to say, you bring up a good point there where this is the first time that you actually race here, because you did do a couple of tests at Barber. So, as you know, testing and racing, those are two totally different animals. So they had to be kind of interesting knowing that, okay, I've been here with one team, now I've been here with Ganassi, but you don't have race notes to compare.
No, like, as you say, racing is super useful sometimes, but at the same time, it's not, testing is super useful, but it's not like racing. Like, it's not the same, the track rubber, it's not the same when you're just testing alone or with your teammates. So three cars on track or four cars, and comparing to 25 cars on track and other series as well. So changes when you have competition as well. There's people chasing you and you're chasing somebody else. So it was really good to know that we still have the same feeling and the same confidence when we're testing than when we're racing. So that's why I'm super pumped to go racing again.
Well, then you take a look at your teammates as well. You have Scott Dixon, whose, you know, accomplishments, they just speak for themselves. You have Marcus Ericsson, who used to run in Formula One. And, you know, you see the fourth car you're sharing, you know, shared between, you know, seven-time NASCAR Cup champion and another driver whose accomplishments speak for themselves in IndyCar. So it's a pretty stacked team at Chip Ganassi. And I'd imagine the engineering meetings are pretty interesting as well, because you're comparing notes and seeing what other drivers are doing and what aren't.
Yeah, for sure. So I couldn't be happier with my teammates. Like, I don't think all the drivers have the opportunity that I've been given this year of not being on the best team, but also having the best teammates. Like, I can learn from the best in the business, Scott Dixon, six-time IndyCar champion. He's been around the team and around IndyCar for a long time, and he's been winning. Then you have Jimmy Johnson. Like, he's not from the world of IndyCar, but he's around the business, and he's been the best in NASCAR Cup, like winning seven championships. That's amazing. This guy is a champion, and we can learn so much from him, even if it's not directly related to IndyCar, but just how to keep winning so many times and so many races and so many different years. Marcus, he can bring the experience from F1, and then Tony Kanaan as well, that he does some races for us in the ovals.
Oh, and by the way, you also have Dario Franchitti helping out as well. So much experience within, and that's just the drivers and the driver coaches, the engineering staff you have within Ganassi also second to none. But let's talk about that race real quick. Especially near the end, and you know, you had the early yellows. Second half of the race, more of a fuel-saving race. But you know, near the end, you had Will Power there, you know, trying to, you know, breathe down your backside, get up under that attenuator. What was that like, knowing that you were close to a race, you know, the race win, but you still had somebody who is a champion in his own right behind you that was basically breathing down your neck?
Yeah, and the thing is that you always know that it's, I don't know, 20 or 15 or 10 laps left to go, and you're P1. But you know, until the checkered flag is down, you know that everything can happen. Like, you can have an issue, you can have a bad pit stop, you can have a full course yellow, everything can happen. So you cannot get anything for granted until the checkered flag is down. And it was not easy. I was chasing some guys, and I had some lap cars in front. I couldn't really overtake them, and I was losing so much pace that Will was chasing me, and he was getting there. But I was a bit calm, and the team on the radio was really useful. We knew that if I was not able to pass the lap cars, it would have been really difficult for Will to pass me. So it was exciting, and we made it happen. So we're good. I didn't enjoy having lap cars, but maybe, I don't know, sometime I'm going to enjoy if I'm running second and the guy running P1 gets some lap cars and I can chase him.
And coming to that checker flag, a lot of drivers, when they had the first one, say they hear certain noises in the car. Were you noticing anything a little different coming, you know, for those in those final laps?
No, not really. I was just focused. I think when it was already like 30, 50 laps to go, I was always and only focused on the next corner. I was hitting my mileage with the fuel, my tires, my pace, and I was just focusing on the next corner ahead. So it's true that when you start thinking too much, you can start noticing that the car is vibrating a bit more, the tires are not handling so well, but then you get in that bad zone, and that's not good for you or for the race. So I just kept it simple. It worked out this way and this time, so we'll try to keep it simple for the future as well.
And of course, this week is St. Petersburg. It's the track where you led your first lap, so it's kind of cool that you're going to the track where you led your first ever lap in IndyCar competition, being a race winner.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like when you can start the season with a really good result, and if it's a win, it's even better. You can keep that momentum on. And especially now, like we have a really busy schedule. It's really condensed. So it's super important to start strong, start confident. And starting with a win, man, it gives you so much confidence. It gives so much confidence and energy into all the team, all the crew, mechanics, all the engineers and everybody back at the office in Indianapolis. So hopefully we can keep it up. Hopefully we can be lots more times in victory lane this year and just fighting for the championship till the end of the season.
The voice of Alex Below, the winner at the Honda Grand Prix of Alabama, I should say, on Inside Open Wheel. Now, we talked early on how you took kind of an unconventional path to get here to IndyCar. The last step you took before you ended up at Dale Coyne Racing was in Super Formula. Now, I only say that because we cover FR Americas, and the champion of FR Americas gets a ride in Super Formula for next season. Talk a little bit about the series for those who are not familiar with it, and you know how it compares, maybe differs from IndyCar.
Yeah, that series in Japan, it's amazing. I think without being part of that series a couple of years ago, I wouldn't be even so well prepared as I feel I am now. So thank you to Super Formula in Japan for that. I think it's amazing that we are able to take some young guys into Japan, which is a different world on racing, I mean, and it's a different car. They still have a really big car, so it's really close to an Indy car, not that much, but it's really powerful. They have two separate compounds as we do in IndyCar, and they are the only series together with IndyCar in single seaters that they do refueling. So that's super important for a driver to start managing the fuel consumption and start managing the pit lane. On pit lane. So yeah, I think it's going to be an amazing opportunity for the young guys coming up.
And of course, you also brought over one of your teams to join with Dale Coyne Racing last season in Team Go. So really, you were setting yourself up for success. And I have to say, you know, following IndyCar Racing and being someone who, you know, lives right by Dale Coyne Racing, it was great to see somebody with your talent be able to have your rookie campaign as well as you did with Coyne Racing.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing last year, the opportunity I was given from Team Go and also from Dale Coyne to race in IndyCar. I think we achieved so many good things together, and I wouldn't be in the position I am today with Chip Ganassi Racing without their help. And it's amazing now they have a really good team with Grosjean there. And Ed Jones, I think they're going to have really good and really strong results during the year. Hopefully not as strong as ours. but yeah, I wish them the best. And I know they're going to be really good this year.
I was going to say, and now you're going into St. Petersburg as the points leader. That's got to put a big smile on your face.
That's cool. That's super cool. I never thought that. Yeah, couldn't start it better. And it's just amazing to be leading the championship, right? We could finish the championship now, but no, I'm super excited to go back racing. I just love racing in the cars, and hopefully we can get some victory circle photos during the season.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm really happy for you, Alex. Great to see that you're able to capitalize on Chip Ganassi's inkling of putting you in the car. Congratulations, and we'll definitely chat with you down the road.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. Hope I can be next week on your show again, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Hey, anytime. Alex Below, the most recent winner in the NTT IndyCar Series. Coming up next, we talk some Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series racing with their Indianapolis 500 winner, Tanner Watkins, next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, it's a little late, but nonetheless, we welcome in the winner of the sixth annual Indianapolis 500 presented by Catalyst 317. And I'll tell you what, It's rare that you see any race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, whether it be virtual or in real life, measured by the same amount of time that you see Sam Hornish Jr. winning oval races in the then IRL series. But nonetheless, Charlie, it's your teammate that took top honors.
Woo!
joining us on Inside Open Wheel is the winner of the Indianapolis 500, the virtual one at least, Tanner Watkins. Tanner, congratulations, bud. This is, you know, I've got to say, to run 1-2 with your teammates, great, but did you really have to cut it that close, really?
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and yeah, I'll take it any way I can get it. For anybody that knows my history racing at Indianapolis here on iRacing, I was just fortunate to be in that position, and I mentioned on the race broadcast, you know, to be able to do that with Andreas, my teammate. He's such a consistent driver, very predictable, and in the sense that I know I can race him tight, and we're going to race each other clean. And I think if it weren't for that, the result would have been different. You know, I would have been a little bit more cautious, and as it were, I had just enough to get by him there at the end. But if it was somebody else, it probably would have been a bit more challenging.
But nonetheless, still, you know, it's not like you won just leading that last lap. You had 21 laps led. The amount of drivers, I've got to go back look at this. You know, you have 12 different leaders. First of all, that's huge for a 500-mile race, 50 lead changes. And, of course, that also speaks to the new form of the IndyCar that iRacing has. But from what I saw, it looked like there was a lot of great close racing throughout the field.
Yeah, for me, I was dealing with a end-of-line penalty from earlier in the season, that previous week at Richmond. So I actually started 28th, and I could tell those guys were swapping the lead a bunch up front, but it took me quite a while to get up there. I was mired in that back half of the field for much of the first 100 laps or so of the race. And thankfully, a strategy call from Jeff Drake, he gave us the option for myself and Andrew Wood to stay out around lap 120. And our car was fairly good. Our package, we were fairly racy in race trim, but just like you said, with this new model of the IndyCar on iRacing, just the further back you are in line in a pack, it's just that much more difficult. So we were really good, and I felt that throughout the race, but it wasn't until we kind of had that track position that things started to fall into place and we could start to dictate the pace a little bit better and try to go on the offensive instead of being on the defensive like you are mired back in 20th on back.
Well, if there's one place you want to have an end-of-line penalty, it's obviously at a race where you're running 400 or 500 miles, because you have plenty of time to keep it up. You don't want to add a shorter, you know, hour-long race where you've really got to play catch-up from the word go.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a great point. And, you know, Indianapolis, I feel like if any track has helped me mature as a driver over the years on iRacing, it's got to be Indy. You know, I've gone out there and tried to make things happen in short order, and you just always end up overdriving the car and either losing positions because you're pushing too hard, or you end up, you know, in the wall, whether it's critical damage or damage that just does enough to kind of maim you for the rest of the race. All of it ends your day, essentially, you know, for competing for the win. So starting in the back, that almost helped me be more patient, because at that point it was like, well, you know, I'm so far back, I got to let the race come to me a little bit. And if we have the car, then we'll be there at the end. And I tried to tell myself that, and it was getting challenging towards the middle part of the race, and I was still about 20th or 21st. But yeah, definitely being at a place at Indy, that's where I personally, you know, would want the end of line penalty, because that's where I have the most experience. But at the same time, I think a younger Tanner would have had a more difficult time dealing with that. And thankfully, after a handful of years on the service, it's just being patient and letting things come to you. That does a lot better in the long run.
That's the voice of Tanner Watkins, winner of the Indianapolis 500, presented by Catalyst 317 here on Inside Open Wheel. Jeremy Scott alongside driver analyst Charlie Ante. Charlie, you missed the race, but you did get a chance to do some practice. So I want to get both your guys' insights. We'll start with Charlie on what the difference between this version of the IndyCar. And the reason why I say version, I don't just mean the windscreen. I mean the build itself, because we know this is a newer build for the IndyCar. But what are the differences between this build and the previous build over at IMS?
Yeah, so what you're talking about is the tire model. They initiated a new tire model in iRacing, I think last year or maybe the year before, and they've been rolling it out to car after car. And it's kind of a thing that's constantly in development. I know they've changed it a few times, even in this season, with the red tire and the prime tire and the alternate tire. But to be honest, I'm not really a big expert on the detail at that level, but I'm sure Tanner can contribute a lot more.
Yeah, as far as feel, I mean, at other tracks, I don't feel as much where there's quite a difference. But at Indy, I can definitely feel the car. To me, it just feels a little bit more sluggish, not as responsive in the mechanical handling than what we had last year, and just what this car has been in years past, going all the way back to the DW12 days. It just feels a little almost heavier, and with that, it doesn't react the same way that we've grown accustomed to over the last few years. But at the end of the day, you know, aerodynamic wise, those characteristics are about the same, and the way that you run in traffic is about the same. But I've found myself personally, I just need to be a bit more cautious and pick my spots to push, because it just doesn't have the pure nimbleness in my mind. It's not off by a lot, but maybe a couple percent. I can tell it's different there.
Now,
do you feel like you can, I guess this is more in road courses than ovals, but do you feel like you can pitch the car around a bit more? Because I remember last year when the IndyCar's drivers were driving it during the lockdown, they were all saying, yeah, if you step out a little bit, then you're going to lose it and you can't really slide it. In real life, you can hustle the car a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the best person to ask for the road course side of things. I feel I've got more confidence driving this car on road courses, in tracks that, you know, I've actually tried to push the car than before. But again, I don't have a whole lot to base that off of. I will say, running it at some of the intermediate tracks, I'm not as concerned with like the snap oversteer aspect of it. I feel a little bit more comfortable in that regard. And I normally like a freer car anyway. But maybe there's a little bit more cushion there on those mile and a half type tracks. Otherwise, other places I can't really decipher that as well.
Take a look at the finishing standings. We're going to go through the top 10 real quick. Tanner Watkins, Andreas Seck, Riley Thompson, Am Crane, Chris Stoffer. Here's the most interesting thing about this, too. Top five, separated by just under a second. So you had point double out one back to Andreas Eich. Riley Thompson was 0.141 behind the lead. Adam Crane just under a half second under the lead, behind the lead, I should say. And Chris Stoffer, 0.8 of a second. Six, Henry Bennett, Robert Moleska in seventh. Adam Dock in eighth. Matt Hollebaugh ninth. AJ Musselman in 10th. Your top 10 separated by about 2.5 seconds. 13 cars on the lead lap. Nito, Greenfield, and Burton round out your drivers on the lead lap. As we said, 12 lead changes among 50 12 leaders among 50 lead changes. Adam Locker, Jason Brophy, AJ Burton, Kristen Merritt, Andreas Eich, Matt Kingsbury, Andrew Kinsella, Phil Krause, he actually led the most laps. Wilson Nito, Matt Pulaski, Tanner Watkins, as we mentioned, and Andrew Wood, all leading laps. Taking a look at the point standings real quick, we see Andreas Eich still leading, and Blocker second. Phil Krause goes to ties for second, I should say. Kinsella fourth. Henry Bennett in fifth. Let's see here. Tanner, you go up to 4-7. Charlie, you fall 5-28. we're actually doing a little demo with the video. Charlie's like, whatever, I don't care at this point. I hate to say it, but
I'm shooting for that top 20, but missing races isn't going to help that.
No, it's not, because you've got a real life race schedule too to hopefully start soon. Also, big break between now and Road America in June, so that's also going to be kind of cool. There's also the official iRacing Indy 500. We're going to try and cover that. All right, so I've got to add, we talked to some of the drivers, as you know, Tanner, and some of them are in racing, and I believe you also have a job somewhat in motorsports.
Yeah, I currently serve as the marketing manager for Lucas Oil Raceway here in Indianapolis. So I handle all of our digital marketing strategies, whether that be social media or email marketing. So very fortunate to have that role. And since I technically work for the NHRA, they own Lucas Oil Raceway. Mm-hmm. And I don't think many people know that, but they own that track as well as properties down in Gainesville Raceway that host the Gator Nationals, which opened the season this year for the NHRA, as well as Atlanta Dragway, which hosts the Southern Nationals next weekend. So I actually oversee each of those properties in the same capacity. And in the past, I've worked for IndyCar and Race Control. I had my own website called openwheels.com that covered the NTT IndyCar series. And currently, I kind of use that site to run our own sim racing 500 in the fall. But yeah, I'm very fortunate. I've gotten to meet a lot of great people in the industry that have helped me get to where I am today. And I wouldn't have gotten where I am if it weren't for some great people that, really lent a hand at the right time. But yeah, just keeping the nose to the grindstone, trying to make things better for, each place I work at. And I've really enjoyed where I'm at so far.
Well, since you've been in IndyCar Race Control, I got a couple bones to pick with you. No, in all seriousness, I know it's a thankless job, but you know, I know people who've worked in race control, and I've done some race control myself, so I totally understand it. So yeah, that's, I mean, it's a lot of fun that you get to. I mean, do you get to go to these different tracks, like, you know, Gainesville and Atlanta?
In a normal circumstance, I would.
Okay.
Obviously, under COVID, in this era, I won't travel to those events. So. I'll obviously be on site for everything that happens here in Indy, but yeah, at Gator Nationals, I had to do everything remote and try to cover the event that way for our social platforms. And I'll be doing the same thing next weekend with a little bit of a twist. We've got a event happening here at Indianapolis at the same time. So that'll be a bit of a handful next weekend, but, that's just part of it. You know, once we get into event season, it's pretty crazy between now and November 1st.
And before we let you go, also, I believe that there was an announcement with the Oval that all the events were going to be on Flow Racing this season.
That is correct. Yeah, we just let that out. And that's such a huge development for us, for, you know, folks that live in Indiana and in the Midwest region. We obviously would love for them to get to the track and be able to attend these events in person. But for those that can't make it, yeah, we've got each of our five Oval events in 2021. They'll be live on Flow. That includes the upcoming Carb Night Classic, where we'll have a bunch of awesome open wheel racing, as well as Thursday Night Thunder Homecoming, the open wheel portion of the SRX Independent Showdown on July 3rd, the Hoosier Classic, which features both champion midgets, sprint cars, and USAC Silver Crown in August. And then the Fall Brawl, a stock car race that we have the first weekend in October. So it's obviously a big deal for us at the track to be able to get those events on Flow. Flow does a great job of covering grassroots racing, and it's a perfect fit for us and what we're trying to market to the masses, both in the Midwest and nationwide.
Man, I need to get connected with Flow. They always do the most fun events, and oh, it sounds like fun. June 15th, the next round of the Coca-Cola of Kokomo Indy Elite Series at Road America. Nice little appetizer to the Rev Grand Prix, which will be later that weekend. Tanner Watkins, congratulations on your win, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no, thanks again, guys, for having me. I really appreciate what you do here and the depth that it adds to this series. So hopefully at some point again this season, I'll get to talk to you guys again soon. Yep. Until then, thanks for everything. Appreciate it.
Well, the chair is always open for you, Tanner. Thanks for joining us. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Charlie and I wrap up the Honda Grand Prix of Alabama.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
A busy show on tap for us next week. We'll talk more about that here in just a little bit. I want to go back to the very first opening segment. I know a lot of, Charlie, I know a lot of listeners love when I do that, but we're talking about Jimmy Johnson. And you brought up a good point in between recordings that about the Casey Kane situation when he ran in Atlantics. I think it was in 2000. And that also reminded me of another former driver, also from out west, Casey Mears. So, thanks to Wikipedia, Casey actually ran Indy Lights, the old iteration of Indy Lights back in the late 90s. 3 years under Team Mears, two under Dorcott, finished second in the championship, but he only won once, and that was at Houston in 2000. That garnered him a fourth place finish at Fontana when he ran with Team Ray Hall. Of course, why are we not surprised that he finished fourth at that Fontana race, Charlie?
I'm not sure.
That was because everybody freaking blew up their motors.
Yeah. I was not aware of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll send you the video to it. And then he ran, also tried to qualify for the Indianapolis 500 2000, the DNQ'd. 2001, ran the attempted the first four races in the IRL season with Gallus Racing. Ran the first three, didn't qualify for Indy again in 2001. And then he ran the last four races for Monon Racing in the CART FedEx Championship with the best finish of fourth at Fontana. And as we know, after that, the rest is history when it comes to Casey Mears. He ran the full 2002 season with Team Jessel and then went on to NASCAR, also winning a Rolex 24 in the process with Scott Dixon and the late, great Dan Weldon.
And, you know, looking back to the 2000 Indy Lights Championship, I have the championship table up here.
Ooh, I got to pull
it up. You know who won that year?
Give me 1 second. I can tell you. As soon as I pull.
Well, that's not fair. I can tell you right now because I have the thing up.
If it, you said 2000,
I'm asking if you could know if you could say it off the top of your head.
I would guess honestly. I haven't pulled all the way down. I would guess 6-time was the champion in 2000.
Who?
Dan Weldon. Not Dan Weldon. Scott Dixon.
That would be correct. You know who's second?
Dan Weldon.
Townsend Bell.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Dan Weldon, he might be in Atlantics.
I think he was in Atlantics that year. So for those wondering, here are the final point standings for the 2000 Indy Lights Championship. It was Scott Dixon, Townsend Bell, Casey Mears, Felipe Giafone, Tony Renna, Jason Bright. Charlie, do you remember when I had the inside groove having Jason Bright as the V8 Supercars correspondent?
I remember the inside groove, but I do not remember that moment.
Yes, Jason Bright was my V8 Supercars correspondent. We would have him on after every race weekend because he raced in Supercars. So that was cool. Jeff Simmons, 7th. Mario Dominguez, 8th. Here's a name you and I haven't heard for a while. Chris Menenga. Oh, man. Wow. Chris Menenga, 9th. Johnny Kane, 10th. Rodolfo Levine Jr., 11th. Jeff Boss, 12th. God, I don't miss that name. Luis Diaz, oh my goodness, 13th. Rudy Junco Jr., 14th. Andy Boss, Orlando Quintanilla, that's right. Todd Snyder, Derek Higgins, and Corey Witherell.
I remember Todd Snyder was a Skip Barber instructor when I was going through there.
Here's something interesting about Corey Witherell. He is the first Native American to qualify for the Indianapolis 500 back in 2001.
Interesting.
Yes.
And to answer your question about Dan Weldon, he finished second in the Atlantics Championship in 2000.
Jesus.
Losing to Buddy Rice.
Oh, my good. Wow. Wow. Let's see if I can see 2000 CART, 2000 Atlantic Championship. Holy cow, yeah. Buddy Rice, Dan Rowe. Oh, Andrew Borden. Oh, my goodness. That's a name from the blast from the past. Will Langhorn.
Alex Gurney was 8th.
God, that was Alex Gurney. Alex Gurney and John Fogarty, the most potent pair in sports cars. Kuno Whitmer. I didn't know Kuno ran in Atlantics. Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. Okay, all right. Enough with the trip down memory lane. Let's go ahead and Let's talk about the Honda Grand Prix of Alabama. Holy cow, was that a nuts start there off of turn four.
Yeah, a very rare mistake from Joseph Newgarden.
Well, what it looked like to me, okay, I full disclosure, I was announcing for this during the start of that race. I ended up looking back at the race because, you know, everybody's like, oh my goodness. You know, I know that turn four can catch you out, but that looked like he, at the same time, you know, got a little, lost a little bit of air. He got pretty dirty air. I forgot who was in front of him, but it looked like he got dirty air, and then that's what pushed him off to the grass.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's nose to tail through there on the first lap, so everyone's getting dirty air.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because you're going up the hill and then you go over that crest, and on cold tires, I guess you get some dirty air, and it stepped out on him as he was going over the crest. So maybe he lost front downforce, and then it came back and it gripped it, and then the front wheels gripped, and then, you know, he just kind of slid out wide and just dropped the wheel, and that was enough to turn him around. Race cars are hard to drive, so it's easy to make mistakes like that.
Especially race cars where you don't have power steering. A lot of cars ended up in the race, some fast cars, including Felix Rosenquist was ramped up in that crash. Got to say, though, once again, the windscreen does its job preventing a tire going in to Ryan Hunter race cockpit. Even he said it. Jimmy Johnson was involved in it, though he did the smart thing and just slammed down his brakes instead of causing more problems.
Yeah, he did a good. He kind of looked like me in the Elite Series, just dodging cars there. With the aero screen, on this incident, I'll come down on both sides with the aero screen. I do think that we've kind of like, anytime there's an incident where a wheel gets anywhere near the cockpit, we're like, oh, the aero screen saved the driver's life. And so I think the aero screen has saved like five or six lives since it was introduced, which I don't think IndyCar has gotten that much more dangerous.
No.
In the last year. But so having said that, as I was watching the accident unfold, I felt so much better knowing that the driver's heads were so much better protected.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that it's a good thing to have. Hopefully in the next car they can make them look a little bit better, but definitely a good thing. Definitely happy the cars have them. Just get used to how they look and enjoy watching our favorite drivers have long careers and lives.
And I mean, here's the thing too, you know, it doesn't look the greatest. I'll admit that. Okay. But for throwing something on safety wise, on an already existing chassis, was they did a good job.
From some angles it doesn't look too bad. I think the worst is the very front angle, just because it just kind of goes straight up on the sides. If it leaned in a little bit, then it would look a little bit better.
Yeah.
And it does kind of make it look a little bit like potato-y from the side.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just deal with it.
It reminds me of a mid-80s IndyCar all grown up from the side.
A little bit. I can see that.
Kind of like the mix of that and the Little Tykes IndyCar.
I'm not very familiar with that.
Okay, I'm going to...
Yeah, you're going to have to show me that.
Oh, shit, because I had one of those growing up. Ha-ha, here it is. That's exactly what... Controls. Okay. Oh, yes, I know. You can allow access. My computer decided it was going to... Oh, there you are. It was going to... You sure you want to do this? Yes, I'm sure I want to do this. So I'm sending you a eBay link of a... the Little Tykes orange IndyCar, if you guys remember that.
So is this like a kid's toy, or is
yes.
it big enough for them to sit in and drive
No,
around?
No, it's a kid's toy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could kind of see that.
Yeah. So that's where we're at with that. So there was there was the long cleanup, obviously. The four cars that were involved that did get back to it, and did I just get out of there? Yes, I did. Oh, there's four cars involved that we thought were done Ryan Hurray, Joseph Newgarden, Colton Herta, Felix Rosenquist. Herta and Rosenquist ended up coming back, but obviously several laps down. Herta was out for a little bit, and then the damage is just too severe. It's a shame, too, because Colton was poised for a good race.
Yeah, where did he qualify?
He qualified ninth.
Yeah, there was a lot of heavy hitters taken out in that accident. The race would have had a completely different complexion if that hadn't happened.
All right, so yeah, I think it would have as well. There was another caution a little bit later on. And that took a couple of laps, but here's a story that everybody's overlooking, I think. Pato O'Ward, the pole sitter, he led the first 17 laps. Then he led some more laps near the middle of the race, 37 through 41, and then near the end of the race, 64 to 66. Because of that caution, we're able to see more pit stop strategies. And I think that's I think that's when that upended the race into a strategic race, which some like it, some don't. It depends. I liked it because you had the eventual winner, Alex Palou, on a different strategy from Will Power, and it was a point where it's like, okay, is he going to catch up to him?
Yeah, I think, I've decided that Pato O'Ward is my driver for this season simply because his car looks so cool.
Well, I'm not surprised.
So I was keeping an eye on him, and the watching how the three-stop and the two-stop strategies played out was very, very interesting. I'm trying to take a much more active role when I'm watching races like this and sort of everything that happens, keeping in mind, you know, what's going on with the strategy. Which is embarrassing to say that I've been watching IndyCar races as long as I have, and I'm just starting to do that. But that's where I am. So yeah, it was cool to see. The three stopper wasn't quite as effective as I was hoping it would be.
A couple of neat items to say too. Sebastian Bourdais took the 14 to the point for about three laps. I think if he doesn't win a race this year for AJ Foyt, I would not be surprised to see him on the podium.
Yeah, very possibly. I mean, I think also maybe he got a little bit of a boost with all of those other cars being taken out. So the rest of the season might not be as easy. But yeah, we'll have to see. He's definitely, you know, he hasn't lost anything.
Alex Palou, Will Power, Scott Dixon, your top three. Pato O'Ward, Sebastian Bourdais, your top five. Bourdais with the most up in the top five, started 16th and finished 15th. And Rins VK, Graham Rahal, Marcus Ericsson, Alexander Rossi, and Romain Grosjean crashing his way. I'm sorry, finishing in the top 10. God, you know, that's another thing, too. Everybody, oh, Romain Grosjean crashes so much. No, that's that title still is always reserved for Andrea De Cesaris. That's why we had the Crashness Award of the Week in the old iteration of the show. And who had Romain Grosjean as highest finishing rookie? I surely didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I definitely wouldn't have put Jimmy Johnson up there.
No.
Although I was surprised that he wasn't far off the pace, but that he wasn't, you know, I expected him to sort of be like the back of the midfield.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe that's, you know, I mean, I guess we'll have to wait for this weekend in St. Pete to really see. Hopefully the entire field stays intact. And it'll be interesting to see with all of those other super competitive cars not being taken out, hopefully, where everyone is going to stack up this weekend.
Here's why I think this weekend's going to be interesting. Look at how quick Alexander Rossi was before he took himself out in turn three late in the race last year. Look at how Bourdais and Newgarden, St. Pete is their playground. Graham Rahal is usually quick there. Scott McLaughlin showed some promise when he was, you know, middle of the race before he ended up out of the race. Colton Herta has yet to prove what he can do in that 26 car. I think we're going to be in for a fantastic race this weekend.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm super excited. Also, I really like this this format of having the season opener and then another race immediately the week after.
Oh, it's fantastic.
So I think they should keep doing that.
Although I know why they had to flip-flop it, I still think St. Petersburg makes a fantastic first race of the year.
Yes, agreed. Even selfishly for myself, having it at like the end of March, it's perfect time for me to take a Florida vacation.
So if you listen
after a long winter, getting a weekend of sunshine down there and to start off the racing season is like, I look forward to it every year. I can't wait till next year.
All the Road to Indy is over at St. Petersburg. Road to Indy TV has your USF 2000 and Indy Pro 2000 coverage. Our friends at IndyCar Radio Network have a lights practice, qualifying, and IndyCar practice on Friday. Saturday, IndyCar practice, IndyCar qualifying. The first lights race is 3:10 Eastern on Peacock and the IndyCar Radio Network. Also, race two for the Indy Lights Sunday at 9:50 a.m. with coverage beginning on IndyCar Radio Network on TuneIn, SiriusXM, and your local affiliates at noon Eastern on Sunday. I get to work and watch IndyCar. Holy crap. I'm excited.
Nice.
Oh, that always makes me happy when I get paid to watch any kind of racing. Of course, now that, you know, IndyCar's there, I won't have to worry about watching F1, you know, and all that. So, but IndyCar's back. It feels so good. Hey, Charlie, you know what's back next week, too?
What?
Actually, no, 2 weeks. Formula Race Promotions. We're going to have on Mike Marini. He's the PR for FRP. We're going to preview all the races going on at Mid-Ohio since now we're no longer not allowed to preview the series since it's technically the season opener, even though the season opener happened at Carolina Motorsports Park. We'll also have a wrap-up from St. Petersburg and look forward to some other racing throughout the docket. So
speaking of, before we put a bow on this, speaking of FRP, I saw a communication from them saying they have 100 entries across all of their fields. So that's great.
That's huge.
I don't know how many races are between now and then. I think maybe one or two after this one. But my first race back is going to be the first race at Pittsburgh in June.
Oh, so that's fantastic.
I'm excited to add my entry to the list. So finally get back in a car if I can fit. Actually, I know I can fit because I was at home in Pittsburgh last week and my dad and I worked on the car a bit and I did fit in it. I didn't put the belts on, so maybe that's going to be a problem, but
so did
I can shoehorn myself in there.
So did your girlfriend spend time with your mom then and did all the dirty secrets got spilled?
Oh, no, that's long been spilled. But no, she stayed here and I just went by myself.
Hey, you know what? At least you're able to get the car ready. Yeah, we'll talk more about that the closer we get to pit race. So for Yuveen Sundramoorthy, Alex Palou, Tanner Watkins, and our driver analyst, Charlie Ante, I'm Jeremy Scott. We thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. We'll see you next week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.